It's up.
Oh, we got to continue the ticket character study. This week, we are joined by former member of the orphanage and host of the Hardline Pigpen. It is the great Danny Dingu Bayless.
Danny. What a resume.
Oh, my gosh. I've seen you like four times in the past month and a half.
Yes. Were you on vacation or furlough last week? That was undetermined by most.
I was on the vacation that I can't mention. Maybe I'll wink twice. Okay. Yeah, I was on Schmershmo last week.
Done.
But it's the last one. We're all done. We're back
forever.
Yeah, I've
heard that there's supposed to not happen again through the end of this year. So, I mean, it's fine if they do, because I think all of us spares have found that we make more on unemployment than we do when we're working.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Give me the
it's kind
90.
Of a sweet little extra vacation, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's what you dorks get for working here, doing what you love.
Way to make it about you, dude.
Yeah. So did you go anywhere for yours? I vaguely remember, because I did absolutely nothing this week.
The first week, because remember, I took 2 weeks off, and the first week was furlough week, and I did a lot of stuff around the casa. And the second week, I told that story on the air about driving to Oklahoma.
Yeah,
to
he met his dad.
Reconnect with my long-lost father of 39 years. So that was pretty sweet.
Did you do anything comparable, David?
No, I didn't go meet.
Did you even call your dad?
Yeah, I called my dad. I was like, "Hey,
okay. Hey, you got any
money? Some money?
Yeah,
yes,
send me some money because the stimulus package or whatever ended the week before my schmershmo, so I didn't get the extra $600. So hit me up on Venmo or something, P1s. Pay me some money. But yeah, we like to dig into kind of the start of how people started here is kind of what we've been doing when we've had our friends on. So we kind of want to dig into Danny and Lake Highlands a little bit, because I feel like we vaguely know the story of how you started up here. I think you produced the Ender you started at? Was that kind of your first full-time?
In an official status, yes. I was hired on officially with Susquehanna August 16th of 99, and that was as nighttime producer with Mark Folliwell and Doug Anderson. And prior to that, starting in March up to that point, Jeff Catlin and I did a two-hour show on Sunday afternoons called The Weekender, and I did some fill-in work weeknights, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, with different hosts, some of Doug Anderson, who ended up getting the on-air gig, the host gig, because Bob, if you remember, Bob, excuse me, ended up taking over middays when Rocco got fired, left, whatever that was, and that slot was open, and they were trying to figure out what to do at nights. And during that time, they brought Dan in and paired him up with Bob in middays, and then once they settled on Mark Folliwell and Doug Anderson, then they pitched to Catlin that they wanted me to produce their show, and that's how I ended up being an official employee. But before that, it's pretty funny. I was doing, you know, like I said, fill-in shows at night, and they were pairing me up with different people, just, I guess, to see if I had anything, which I guess they thought I did. They're, you know, completely fooled. But it was funny. I was the talent fee that they were paying back then to do a three-hour show at night was really good. Like, I think I was making like $300 a show.
Hello.
Hey.
Maybe more. I don't remember. It was a lot, but I remember getting those because they had me just fill out a timesheet, and I would get these contract labor checks every couple of weeks. I'm like, holy crap, I could almost quit my job considering what I was making at the time and just do this full, you know, pseudo full-time working three nights a week. And then once I got the producer gig and was making like $23.5, I realized that it was all, it was like, you know, when they give you the free vial of crack to get you addicted. It was very much like that.
The WMD. The WMD was the $300.
Pandemic.
So I've been chasing a payday for 20, 21 years now, and it hasn't happened.
So do you remember what the vibe was whenever, I guess around the station, whenever Dan was hired? Because I'm sure a lot of people around here were expecting them to hire internal and pair someone, you know, Falwell or whoever with Bob. And then they bring in this random dude from Cleveland. Do you remember people being upset?
I don't remember anybody internally being upset. He caught a lot of flack from listeners back then, but it's, you know, because they would call them carpetbaggers and would dig on them for not being native Texans or from not coming from within the confines of the station. But I remember everybody, I don't know, I don't really recall a lot of angst towards Dan. He's an acquired taste, I guess, to some. If you're just initially exposed to him, he and I had a really good experience because he maybe had been there two or three days and was, I think he was living in a temporary place or some rental property, and he locked in on me, I guess, based solely on I was profiled by Dan as being someone who might like to party because I had longer hair and maybe a little less conservative than I am now as far as my appearance. But he asked me if I wanted to go on a ride around the neighborhood with him, if you know what I mean. And we drove around over on Maple, Oaklawn area, and connected in a nice way. So I hit it off with Dan initially.
Because he did that with Corby too, right? He asked Corby if he likes to party, and Corby just ran on air and was like, "Hey, man, this Dan guy wants to know if I party."
I don't remember that, but I can say that I had a unique in-person, non-on-air experience with Dan that connected us at that time, for sure. I liked Dan from the beginning. I thought he was understated, hilarious. I loved his dry, snotty, smart-ass sense of humor. It was right in line with the stuff that I liked.
Has he changed a lot since being a family man now and being a dad? Because I've definitely heard those stories like the ones you said where he would be a partier, and me only knowing him personally now for about a decade, it just seems completely different. Like, I don't see him, I don't think he's had a drink of alcohol in the past 15 years.
Recall him being a much of a drinker even early on. That wasn't his vice. As far as his sense of humor and his unawareness of what's appropriate and his recklessness and fearlessness on the air and with his brand of humor, I don't think that's changed much. I don't know much about his personal life other than what he tells on the air, because we don't really hang out a lot other than at Ticket Stock, the, you know, one time a year that I see Gordon. I couldn't really speak to that, but as far as the way he approaches his craft and his brand of what his shtick, I don't think that's changed a whole lot.
Would you like to reconnect with Dan and go drive around again sometime?
Yeah, I think those days are kind of behind me. But, you know, anything can happen.
God, I would love a comedian's in cars getting coffee with you and Dan.
Well, it wouldn't have been coffee. Comedians in cars getting baked is what it would be called.
With the flask.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to get into Mike Reiner a little bit here on the last days. And he said that he made his mind up, I think, sometime in December. And he called you guys during dry dock, and he talked to you and Corby and told you guys. I learned in the team meeting when we all came back is when I learned. Did you see the writing on the wall before he told you that it was going to be over?
No. As far as him, the possibility of him stepping away, no. That was a surprise. That was a real, real big surprise to Corby and myself, for sure. That did not see that coming at all.
We've also talked a little bit about how he's definitely warmed up to the younger people at the station, me and Justin included, compared to, you know, 20 years ago when he would just have someone in his crosshairs and just seemed to make it hell for him. When did you see that change?
Okay, this is a two-part answer. Number one, I will say that Mike has always gravitated, no matter what the age, no matter what the status within the ticket hierarchy, he's always gravitated to the underdog, to the nerd, if you will, and to people that he might have something in common with. Now, if you walked around and you had a perceived air of coolness about you, which I think is why he wasn't a huge fan of Corby early on, because Corby, you know, he's a very self-confident guy, and Mike, I think that didn't really chide well with Mike early on. And so people like that looked that had appearances of kind of having their crap together, he was more reluctant to connect with them. But I saw him connect with people that I was like, why in the world? I mean, as much of a curmudgeon as he can be and very selective on who he lets into his world, I don't know why he would choose this person to lock in on. And there was a guy that used to work up there, and I think he was an intern and he did some board op stuff, but this guy was clearly looking for a foothold to develop some type of on-air persona or shtick. And this guy's name was, I don't remember his name, his God-given name, but he went by Hip Hop Paul. And he spoke in very urban lingo and called everybody Cuddy. But Mike just found something that he thought was there in Hip Hop Paul, and we were all dumbfounded by it. It just did not make sense to us, because on the surface, this guy had an incredibly limited box of tools when it came to doing this job. So there were other people like that you'd be like, wow, that's so strange that Mike's kind of, you know, bringing this person under his wing. And I'm sure what happened in the past is he was that guy. He was the dude that wanted to hustle to get into this business. And probably a lot of people looked at Mike as an oddball. And the people I'm sure there were people along the way in his career that saw something in him and took him under their wing and maybe did the same thing that he was trying to pass on to someone that may not have the same type of confidence that you may get from doing this for years and developing your shtick or your persona. So it wasn't like it wasn't a blanket judgment thing for him to where he, if you weren't in the trust tree, then you were kind of like outside of his purview. There were people that he would lock in on that you would be very unsuspecting of why he would do that. So I think that he wasn't that way with everybody. And to answer the other part of your question, you asked me if when I saw certain things change in him, I saw a massive sea change in Mike around the end of 2007, mainly for two reasons. I think one of them is because we had a very, very dear friend in common named Carter Albrecht, who was my best friend. We were roommates together. We played in two different bands together concurrently at the time. And he was kind of out of the blue. He was killed in a crazy East Dallas shooting accident, if you want to call it that. It's a whole, we could do 4 hours on that. But When Carter passed away, I saw a real change in Mike, because I think that was maybe the first time in his life. And we're talking about 13 years ago. So Mike would have been in his mid-50s. Yeah, somewhere around in his mid-50s. And something clicked in him to where he became he started being more willing to reveal that soft underbelly and be a little bit more vulnerable and a little bit more accepting, because I think Carter's death, as much as it hit the people that were really close to him hardest for a long period of time, it did affect him. And I saw a sort of a transformation and a bit of a change in him. And that was compounded with the ending of the relationship, the on-air and somewhat personal relationship between him and his co-host, Greg Williams. I knew that relationship had grown very strained over the years and saw it firsthand. And I think Grego ending up leaving the station due to, you know, the circumstances that are well documented. If you want to look them up, they're out there. I think that lifted a lot of stress, a lot of angst from him, and gave him a little bit more flexibility and latitude to kind of take a breath and be himself and not necessarily be on alert, on edge all the time. And I think the combination of those two things was a huge factor in Mike becoming a lot more affable, including or inclusive with others. Those two things were definitely, it's just my opinion, but I think they played a part in kind of a somewhat of a transformation with him.
Have you talked to Mike much since his retirement?
Not a ton, just when he calls in for his weekly baseball segments on the Hardline, which is a done deal. We're going to visit with Mike every Wednesday at 4:15, I believe. And that's kind of awesome to keep him connected. And I know he's doing a co-host situation this week at some point on middays.
Friday, yeah.
If I'm Friday? Okay, cool.
Yep.
No, I haven't just had a bro down with him, and mainly because we wouldn't lock up on the phone for long periods of time outside of work. But as Mino, as you well know, Mike was not hard to find in the social scene in Dallas. If you wanted to find him, there were two or three places that you were pretty certain to cross paths with him. And that's when I would mostly see him and catch up with him and kind of see him in the wild and in a different element than we saw him around the station. But no, not a ton of conversation, just usually kind of a catch up and how are you doing, brother, and all that when I call him to do the baseball show.
You got a few more minutes, Danny? You mind doing one more segment with us?
Anything for you guys. I've been so busy and blown y'all off for the last three Sundays, so my time is yours.
We'll kind of switch gears next and have some fun, do some hypotheticals, and just kind of jerk around with Danny.
This is...
All right, 10:13 is the time here on the ticket. You got Justin Montemayor, you got David Mino.
Hey.
We also have star of the orphanage, the official of all things jarring, Danny Bayless with us.
Yeah.
Do you care to explain jarring again, or we got that set?
I think that's pretty well documented.
Wait a minute. Okay. We have two parties involved here.
Yeah.
Justin was on the board that day.
I just felt like I wanted to get all those answers or all those questions answered, so let's just get it taken care of that day.
You know, that's on me for not censoring myself better. That's not your fault.
I mean, it always is kind of awkward knowing that you're by a microphone, and especially when you're on remote, you don't know for sure that they brought you down. Or even in here, like, sometimes these lights don't function properly and the mic can still be on or off despite what the little light says.
I did it this week. Do you remember that, David?
No, I wasn't.
I was off.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Away. It was Ham. Oh, yeah. So Followell was on for his weekly Thursday 4:10 segment. And, you know, Bob and Mark, they can talk.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we were a little bit late coming back from break to bring Mark on, and you're pretty good. I mean, you've been in that chair for quite some time, and you know how to automatic, like, this muscle memory tells you that if I'm not going to be on mic for a particular segment, you're pretty good at shutting my mic off. If I forget, you'll see the red light on and just kill it. And I guess that I had read a liner or something to come back, and I left my mic on, and I looked over at Berm, and I looked at the clock, and it was like 21. And I said, not out of frustration, but in a bit of sarcastic tone, I said, well, this is going to go until 38. Just knowing that, you know, with Bob and Mark together, that it's always going to be late. You're basically going to get two questions in, two long questions and two long answers, and then whatever Corby can throw in there. And what should be a 9-minute segment is going to end up being 20. And I looked in the studio, and Corby and Bob are in there waving their hands like this, like they're directing a plane onto the runway.
Oh my!
And Berm goes, "Your mic's on." I'm like, "Oh, thanks." So I had to turn it off, but I don't know if they heard me, but it definitely went out over the air.
Oh, that's so awesome!
One of my favorite was when they thought you were talking on the air, but it was me misfiring and playing the "What Year Is This" drop. That I didn't even know that was a drop that was on my array. I've never heard that drop before.
It is amazing that I don't know if it's static electricity, but it's funny how if you're within a foot of that screen, that just for no inexplicable reason, that drops will just randomly fire off. And you're like, I didn't touch anything, I promise.
Like if Lee Trevino's online, perhaps?
Yeah. Yeah, during a commercial break. Yeah, especially the Lee Trevino one.
Did you play like La Cucaracha?
No, play the C. La Cucaracha. It was my second week.
At the edit. What now?
It was, played edits too.
We'll have to. I'm sure Jay can find it in there. But it was seriously my second week working with you guys. You guys had Lee Trevino on for two or three segments. And Corby asked Trevino if he could stick around for one more segment. And as I'm going to put him on hold, something happened. And the Corby C drop fired off.
That's right.
And then I just froze up and...
Corby, you hear Corby in the background.
Forgot how to throw it to break. Forgot how to turn mics off.
Corby's like, what the hell?
And I thought my career was over.
Oh,
I would love for it even to hear that.
Do we have it, Jay? Play it for Danny. Let's play it.
Or anything.
Or don't play it. I don't want to
wet my pants.
No, that's not it. That's the other Danny mic's on. The Lee Trevino one. There's like 10 people in that room. It's fine.
And they can't find it.
Just pop on if you find it. If not.
Are you aware, Danny, that
the British Open starts tomorrow?
We would love to
get your thoughts about that. Can you hang through this break and do a little bit more with us here?
Yeah, you got it, my man.
All right, very good. More with Lee up here on the ticket.
Tomorrow on the morning news.
Oh, my God. And it's
I don't even think Mike noticed it.
He just fought through it.
Maybe he thought it was Lee answering his question.
I mean, the drop did answer the question.
It really did. Oh, my God, that's great.
Oh, man.
And it's always funny how the drop that's played is not just a complete non sequitur that makes no sense. It somehow does make sense, and it's really offensive.
Yeah. Well, Trey played this team sucks during a Stars game.
I was on the other side of the room. The same thing happened with Mino.
I was in there. Yeah. I was... That was like during your tryout for the top 10 when Schmon Schmahey.
And they're doing their open, and you know, you just hear Mike go, "This team sucks."
Yeah, it was like,
"This team sucks."
Like, the Stars have to win. It was like a must win game to make the playoffs.
Epic. Oh my gosh. Yeah, we had Groobs on a few weeks ago, and we kind of got the answer to this. That was a good time. When was that?
When?
2 or 3 weeks ago,
Like 3 weeks ago, probably. And we, you know, asked him the question, and David certainly agreed, how often they do things or play things just to make you laugh, which is great. Or like,
it's 100% of the
time. It's all just to make Danny laugh, like the she ate his drop the second that was in his arsenal. He couldn't wait to play it because he knew
she ate his ass.
It'd make Daddy Danny laugh.
Out of context, that is so bad. And I hate having to retell the story every time to qualify the drop.
Because you're not talking about an old girlfriend.
No, I'm talking about my German Shepherd when I was 5 years old that bit the rear end off of a trespasser in the backyard.
She ate his ass.
Okay,
yay. I could have come up with a better way to phrase that.
Well, I think even the way you inflected that one, you could have been like, she ate his ass. Not the way you did it, which is...
Like I was directing it.
Right.
It's like you're making the action.
Yeah, it's like you're pointing to a screen and saying, like...
Look, guys!
Here's on the Telestrator where she, Anyway.
So, if I could get rid of one of my moments... I don't have too many e-breaks, but I would definitely go back and redo the Lee Trevino moment. Danny, if you could... get rid of one drop of yours and go back in time and undo one of your e-breaks, what would they be?
An e-break or a drop?
Let's do both.
I don't have a ton of e-breaks. I can't even recall one because it's not unheard of that one will be committed on any time unintentionally, but drop wise, I don't know. Maybe the flask drop, just because that's been so played and it's so completely out of context. But maybe that one, kind of like Corby's, would be the surrounded by beautiful women for 20 years. I went to TCU. He hates that.
Danny, your e-break would have to be when we were doing Concert Calendar and you just dropped the biggest no-no word on the radio when you were talking about Corby.
Which one?
When he was talking about Big Chief, he's like, he was mimicking Corby. That was where we got Jake Chimp.
Oh. It was like a Corby band.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did I do?
You said the F word.
You're mimicking Corbin. Yeah, you said you dropped an F bomb.
That's where we got the Jake chimpanzee laugh.
Okay. Yeah, that happens, though. That's just kind of like feeling too comfortable and hey, we're 27 and at a sports bar. You can say whatever you want, and sometimes you just forget where you are.
Do you
and say F words on the radio?
If you don't mind, guys, I have a question.
Of course.
Danny, do you watch what you say or change your inflection when you're next to Mino? Because I remember filling in for Mino, and I was writing down so many Danny drops because just the way you speak is incredible. I love your inflection, but Mino mentioned that maybe you would maybe... Are you more aware of Mino writing down drops and stuff? And do you maybe change the way you phrase things, or do you just don't care anymore and let it fly?
I don't even think about it. And most of the time, I'm not even cognizant if he's writing something down. Birmingham was writing a ton of stuff down.
Oh, yeah.
So it was... If I sense, and what it is if you say something, it maybe it's, I don't know what, like Corby's cliches of making a brag. You'll see the technical director just kind of normally sitting upright, then we'll just lean over with a pencil and start scribbling something down, and you know that something's going to be logged forever. I didn't see you do that a lot, Trey.
Oh, I was. Oh. I was. There's a whole
page.
He
didn't want you to see it.
Yeah.
He was doing him on notes on his phone. So.
Just taking mental notes.
Because you still refer to David as the devil? Because you call him the devil a lot.
I think I've referred to everybody that sat in that chair over the last two decades as the devil at some point in their career. Because what happens is, like Mino said, very reluctant, but just kind of leery and want to do a good job and not... You want to do a really good professional job once you start. When you start that gig... Because the last thing you want is technical screw-ups to show that you're not capable of handling that aspect of it. But once that comfort level comes in and the engineer has a grasp on, kind of like I referenced earlier, like that muscle memory where your hands just know where to go, you don't even have to think about it, then you can become, I see them becoming more bold, maybe whether it be with on-air input or pulling things from the hosts and using them against them. And once they get to that level of pulling things and using them out of context, I mean, this all goes all the way back to Kevin Fox Expo, who was the board op on the Hardline when I started on that show in like 2000. That's when they become the devil, is when they start using that they stockpile a cache of weapons and start using them against you when you think that they're your friend. Like freaking Birmingham this week, I said something to him off the air, kind of in the trust tree confidence, and he immediately opens his mic and tells those guys what I just said. And it was kind of about them.
You can't trust him.
No, and I told him afterwards, I laughed because it wasn't that big of a deal. I was like, hey, dude, we're kind of in the, the trust bubble here. Don't do that. But he doesn't care. No. And I love his ongoing feud with Bob.
Oh, it's so.
Have you guys noticed that?
Yeah.
He can get under Bob's skin.
That's lasted a long time, too.
It's great.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. Oh. So he was on all week with us last week, and I swear to God, Friday, he just unleashed hell on Bob and would not back down. And I told him, it's like, I'm kind of proud of you because no one's going to remember the fact that all of the commercials got played on time. But by you doing this, whether you get fired or not at the subversive direction of Sturm, you know, that's neither here nor there, but you're definitely making a name for yourself by being the guy that challenges Bob. And what I think that's a great niche to have, don't you?
Yeah, if you don't have to work with them every day, like if it's kind of a, if you know that you're filling in when I'm like, it is fun to pick little nits at people every now and then, but I'm not going to go out of my way to actively tick someone off every day. Like you just kind of want to make other people laugh. Like I wouldn't want to be on Bob's I don't know if Pam actually is or if it's just kind of a bit, but he does aggravate him. I wouldn't want to do that on an everyday basis.
I know it's a bit. I know he likes Bob. It's not like they have some real true rift going on off air or whatever, but I think, like you said, it's if you don't have to work with them every day, you can kind of walk in for a week and just unleash hell and then walk away. And you've kind of left your mark for that week, and people remember that. It's really funny.
How would Bob react to one of my all-time favorite Reconsider lounges, if you did this one now, which was the, I think, Bob fronting as Wilson Pickett, must bang Sally. You think you'd take that one in stride these days? If you're looking across from him?
I'm sure Ham, okay. I'm sure Ham will text it to him and
yeah,
him.
He'd be okay with it now. Oh. He would just kind of look at me and go, "Sir." Yeah, I don't think I'd have a. I don't think I'd get a text message after the show or anything like that.
Must bang Sally. Man, that made me laugh. Oh, my gosh. So another thing that I think was concocted in that little room of y'all's, the fart dungeon, that is the ticker control room, is a hypothetical that I think about every day, Danny. And that is okay.
We have a few of these.
The crap your pants hypothetical, which is you got to pick one or the other. Either once a month, you have to crap your pants, or once a year, someone comes and finds you and craps your pants for you.
How did this start? I don't remember. Me and Justin were talking about this in the break, and I'm trying to remember how we came up with this.
I think it... Did it have to do with the George DiGiani drop of why do we crap your pants?
That's it.
and man, there's nothing better. And Mike Reiner was the best at this. Is we loved dissecting sentences and diagramming them and trying to make sense. And so you'd hear that and you go, wait a second, why do we as a collective crap your pants? And he misspoke and didn't say the phrase the way why he wanted to say why do you crap your pants?
Why do we? Your pants?
There it is.
Yeah, the language that you chose there it brings up an entirely different visual, and I think that's where it started. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was. So I was thinking it's like God, that would be awful if you were just at a bar and some dude walks up to you and opens up the back of your pants and somehow connects his nude bottom with the top of your bottom and just fills your pants full of his mess. Would you rather have that once a year and you don't know when it's going to happen, or once a month for an entire year, you don't know when it's going to happen? You're just going to be sitting somewhere and go, oh my God, and you're going to crap your pants.
And it's a full-blown crap. It's not a little shart.
Yeah.
Right. It's the full Monty, if you will.
Hey, which one were you taking? Because I'm doing the once a year and getting it over with.
Everybody took that, and I was befuddled by that response, because the life I live, it doesn't really matter. If I'm at Whole Foods wearing my Timberwolves mask and underwear, if that just happens, fine. If I'm at home, great. If I'm at work, it's like... I would just come prepared. I wouldn't wear a diaper all the time, but I would definitely have a change of shorts and maybe a fresh pair of jeans at the hand. Always would have a backpack on with tools.
Yeah, but what a beating.
Your love bag.
Your crapping survival kit that you have to carry everywhere. Your first aid kit.
It's once a month. And look, most of us do that at least three or four times a year anyway, right? So you're just kind of tripling up.
Just imagine like the 29th and you haven't done it yet.
Oh, and you know it's...
You're just going to have to sequester yourself.
I think that's better because you know it's coming.
I think it's better too. You can really, really focus on the next 48. Now, the problem is the diarrhea devil going to tap you on the shoulder on August 1st?
Oh, yeah.
And you get back to back.
Yeah, once it's
thinking,
done,
oh, I'm free.
Know.
I'm in the clear. And then the month, the calendar of the month changes, and then it's the first, and you're thinking, oh, this isn't going to happen for a while, but it just happens that day. Well, then you spend the next 30 days feeling great.
But see,
so if it happens early in the month, you can live a normal life.
But so can you if the guy craps your pants for you. Does that March 11th, you're free and clear except for your own normal, beefy Bel Grande crap your pants. Like, you don't have to worry about it again for the rest of the year.
I know. There's something about another man or woman.
And especially with pandemic time.
I think that would bother me if it was a really hot woman and I thought she was coming to talk to me and all she was really wanting to do was literally get in my pants to crap in them.
But what if you're that into that? Me. Has anyone ever done that to you?
What, you sexualize it?
Yeah, maybe.
People have.
I mean, until you try it.
I don't know if I'm gonna.
You might really
I don't know if
like
I'm gonna
it.
Steer into that one, David. I might fight it a little bit.
Ride the wave, Justin.
God,
you never know where it's gonna take you.
I'm up here just doing a show, and some dude just walks in and
yeah,
dumps me out of my chair and pulls my pants down.
I think if someone did that to me, I would do it to them back. Like they crapped my pants, I would crap their pants right back.
Well, maybe they took the same thing and you guys can be crap your pant buddies.
That's true.
Yeah.
And you can make it as solid of turds as possible and not in very minimal cleanup.
People are going to church right now.
What if it was Phil the Slug who did it?
Mm. We don't have time for that one. We'll have to catch up on that one.
I'm glad
to
hear you stuck by your guns and you're saying you would crap yourself 12 to 15 times a year.
In a year. Now, that's also, though, you have to keep in mind that maybe it doesn't have to happen once a month. It's just 12 times in a year. That would be pretty unnerving.
Ooh. Yeah, especially if you haven't had but one or two and it's December. Like, I got a hell of a month ahead of me.
What if you could opt into taking those 12 in consecutive days? Would you do that?
Like the 12 days of Christmas?
Yeah.
On the first day of crapping myself?
Yeah, I think I'd take 12 in a row. I've recovered from back surgery. I can do this.
Yeah, I guess you just have to constantly wear a diaper.
That'd be fine.
Yeah.
There's worse things than crap.
I don't even understand where this hypothetical comes from, because it's not like either one, you get $1 million or something.
No, you just
pick. It's like a Saw situation. You got to pick one to stay alive.
Right, exactly.
All right. Well, good times, Danny. We appreciate
you
hanging out with us.
You guys, what's coming up next?
We are going to make fun of ourselves and play our own e-brakes, including Cray Trays.
Maybe we offer a chance at Cray Tray Redemption.
Who knows? I thought y'all were working the phones. I saw that on Twitter.
Maybe we'll work the phones.
Do you want to answer them? Okay. Well, you can answer the one-ball line.
I can't do that from here, but I'll call in.
Okay.
All right. We'll get Danny on the phone.
Oh, we already have one caller. We'll talk to him or her next on the ticket.
All right. I love you guys. Thanks
love
for
you, Danny.
Me.
See you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye.